You are listening to Secret Handshake, the podcast covering the movies that help you identify your friends and maybe make a few more along the way. Coming up, Spine number 71, The Night Comes for Us, and the gory, chaotic cinema of Timo Chiantu and Gareth Evans, featuring cops, killers, ninjas, yakuzas, crime lords, corrupt politicians, rich perverts, machine guns, machetes, hammers, baseball bats, excessive large caliber mayhem, and eco motherfucking Yue. Martin.
Yes.
Welcome back to another edition of Secret Handshake. I'm your host, Jacob Knight, and joining me as always is Martin Carlson. Martin, I'm going to pose the question out front. Is Timo Chiantu the greatest action filmmaker currently working?
Yes.
You think so?
Yeah.
Like, undoubtedly, or does he have competition?
I think for the type of action he does. So okay. I don't think he's got car mayhem down yet. Or he's done a lot of it. You don't see a lot of it in his movies. There's some car stuff, but it's not a huge part of it.
The Shadow Strays starts to dip its toe into that pool a little more than than his other movies. But yeah, you're probably right.
I would say that, he is easily the best martial artist director, I think, living today in terms of just like. Anytime you're like, oh, see this movie, I'm comparing it to him. Like any new film today, I'm comparing it. I mean, they're saying, oh, that's like Timo, or he would do that better. Like when someone says it's the craziest action movie, especially something made in America, I'm like, okay. You know?
Yeah, it's like Chad Stahelski is probably his only real competition. And even then, he's directing a different type of action with the gun kata, gun fu, whatever the hell we want to call it, in the John Wick movies and everything. The 8811 guys are like all coming up after him and are kind of doing the same thing. But like right now, Timo is the guy.
Yeah.
And because of that, we're doing The Night Comes for Us. Also because we got to see it on the big screen.
Fuck.
One of the only handful of crowds I ever got to see this movie on the big screen because it was produced for Netflix. Were you there in 2018 at Fantastic Fest when they played it and they premiered it at Fantastic?
I was there, and it was Timo was there and Joe Taslim was there. Eco is not there. Joe Taslim made t-shirts that he handed out to a few people. He said, and he was like the kindest man in the world and was just like, I'm so honored to be here. He was just like the nicest fucking guy.
Scott Adkins is a lot the same way too. Is that
salt of the earth?
You almost wonder if these guys are like the nicest dudes ever because they know they could kill everybody in that theater too.
Well, did you ever like Scott Adkins has his great podcast, and there's a great interview where he interviews Joe, and it's like these two sweet fucking sweethearts talking about also their amazing careers. They're so deferential to one another. It's just like nice guy war. It's so sweet. But I was there. And I will say it's probably, I can't think of another more raucous Fantastic or South by screening for me.
Yeah.
I saw John Wick 4 actually, which did blow the roof off. People kind of expected that because it's John Wick 4.
I was at the original John Wick screening.
Yeah.
You know, at Fantastic Fest when it premiered there. But like, The Night Comes for Us, I actually missed that opening screening.
Yep.
And I saw something else was playing against it, and people came out of that and were basically, like, levitating out the fucking
theater. I lost my mind. I fucking lost my mind, dude.
And I'll never forget, Evan Sadoff from Birth Movies Death was like, you gotta see this movie. It's like the Dead Alive of action films.
That's a good, like, that's a great call.
I don't even know what that means, but it was playing at 8 a.m. the next morning for a press screening, so I got up super early, drank all my caffeine, got my breakfast tacos, and watched that movie at 8 in the morning, and was basically, like, punching the empty seat behind me, because it was like me, a smattering of like Draft House employees who, you know, are basically getting ready to work those grueling serving shifts during Fantastic Fest, and then like a couple other critics who had missed that screening. But I was just like, holy shit. And then I got a ticket to see it with its next public screening, just because I wanted to see it with an audience. And so I saw it twice at that Fantastic Fest. I never do that. I never see a movie at a film festival twice, because for me, when you're there, it's about seeing as much as humanly possible. And if you're doubling up, you're taking a spot away from like a potential, basically your next potential best movie, you know, or most favorite film of all time, you know? And like the only other one I can honestly say, I think I've seen multiple times at a film fest, and it also was at Fantastic Fest, was The Astrologer. I went and saw The Astrologer like three times when it played at Fantastic. Like, I would just, because they screened that one a whole bunch for like press and stuff, especially after that initial like blow the roof off screening of when The Astrologer kind of premiered there. And that they played it at all these weird little like press screenings. Like, there was a couple during the day. There was one during the normal slots in the morning. And I hit like every one, because I was like, I have to see this fucking thing again. But The Night Comes for Us then is relegated to Netflix because it's produced for that, and basically buried as a piece of fucking content.
As our friend Simon would say, so much Indian fare. So much martial art fare.
Yeah.
It's just basically anything, any Asian cinema that Netflix buys is just, it's all there, but they don't advertise it.
It's their equivalent of like a shelf stuffer.
Yeah, totally.
At the video store back in the day, is that it was just a piece of product that you bought in order to keep those shelves looking filled.
Jesus,
and if
though.
You could make the money back, because obviously like The Night Comes for Us, it's an Indonesian martial arts movie. You know, starring Joe Taslim and Iko Uwe, and it comes from Timo Chinatu, who at that point he'd made Headshot, and as when he was part of the directing duo, the Mo Brothers, and he made some horror movies as the Mo Brothers, and he made Killers as the Mo Brothers with his directing partner, Kimo Stambul. And this was his first movie where he broken away from that, was basically directing solo, and nobody really expected it. It's just kind of the way that like Netflix invests, and this is pre Squid Game, in like foreign language, especially genre fare, because it plays better. All they have like all these international markets to play to too. But it's like, that can't be that expensive to buy this movie or produce this movie. And so they buy it and it's out there. But again, it's just a piece of content for anybody who might stumble upon it and champion it. Because that's the thing we were talking about too, is that like we, you know, his latest movie, The Shadow Strays, just came out last month. And that's my favorite movie of the year.
Yeah.
Like, bar none. Nothing even comes close. I've seen it six times all the way through. I've watched it maybe 15 or 20 in pieces at this point. And this is like in a month. Well, a couple months time, because I got a screener pretty early. But like, that movie is mind-blowing, but it feels like nobody outside of like a very small collection of hardcore like action heads are even talking about it. And even their reaction is pretty muted. But you wonder if it's just because, again, it's buried in the content machine that is Netflix.
It's got to be. And I think this is like the definition of a secret handshake kind of film that you pass on to people. I'm thinking, Shadow Strays, but also specifically Night Comes for Us. I showed it to many friends when it hit Netflix. I told my brother to watch it, my roommate at the time. I was like, dude, this just, the day it hit.
Yeah.
I was like, I've been waiting for this to come out again. And everyone I showed it to was like, I mean, let's just skip it. It's the definition of a face melter. It's
yeah,
just
I was like, going to do that too, is that spoiler alert, like there is no debate with this one. You like you show it to anybody and it completely nukes their fucking brain.
I will tell you, I tried to show it to my dad, did not go over well. Dave Carlson, not a fan, because my dad loves martial art movies, but it's so violent. He's not big. It's gory. I mean,
but
it's
let's
so
talk
gory.
About that for a second, because there is, I have shown it to a couple people too, and like 90% of the people who you show it to are like on the same page that you are. They're like, holy fuck. Because I mean, let's face it, like The Night Comes for Us, if you described it to someone, it really is like a throwback to the 80s. Heroic bloodshed movies
yeah,
of like
John Woo,
yeah. Johnny Toe, all
there's
Corey
some Michael
Yoon.
Mann shit in there, honestly.
There's some Michael Mann stuff in it too, but I mean like it's working story-wise on a very elemental level.
Yeah.
Is that it's about, you know, a group of rogue assassins, one in particular who decides in the middle of a massacre to save this child, and now he's pursued while he tries to escape and get this kid to safety by just his like deepest brother in crime, who's the assassin, the heroic assassin, is Joe Taslim, and then you know his adversary is Iko Uwais. I mean, arguably the two greatest screen fighters working now, or maybe ever.
I mean, they came at that. We'll get into this. I want to talk this in a little bit, but like that era of like Tony Jaa as
yeah.
well, where it was like again word of mouth. Your friend would be like, "Have you seen The Protector?"
Yeah.
You know, they were like in that grouping.
And we're going to get to that when we start talking about, because you can't talk about Timo's movies without talking about the Raid films
yeah,
first.
Yeah, exactly.
And the films of Gareth Evans in general. But like, the plot to the Night Comes for Us is just like, it's a run all night plot. It's just this guy trying to get this kid to safety. He's pursued by his blood brother and all of these assassins that have basically been employed to take him out. And it's just one relentless set piece after another. Now, where it differs, and where the majority of Timo's cinema differs from your standard heroic bloodshed movie, like, for example, like if you were to show your dad, the great Dave Carlson, I don't know, Hard Boiled.
Which he didn't like that either.
Okay, so yeah, maybe that one's more extreme, but like, I don't know, a Jackie Chan movie. Like Jackie Chan, like Drunken Master.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Like, that's a pretty standard martial arts film that he would be like,
well,
okay.
I showed him Ip Man. He loved that.
Exactly. Yeah, Ip Man's probably the best modern
example
of this, is that that's a real throwback to those classic martial arts movies.
Bloodless.
Even some wuxia in there, too. But Timo's movies are gorier than most horror films.
Yeah.
Like, he really revels in the wetness of the violence, and people are getting their throats cut, they're getting their heads ripped off, they're losing limbs, and he's detailing it in like very graphic, close-up, prosthetic, like gnarliness, you know? So he's almost playing to he is playing to the martial arts crowd. I don't want to discount that, but he's also playing to a very specific martial arts crowd who might also be into like, you know, Japanese extreme cinema like Takashi Miike.
I was thinking the exact same thing. It feels like Ichi the Killer Land.
Exactly.
Like specifically. Yeah. But actually, well, even the worldview of these like these sadistic assassins and the kind of just the violent sadism of these people. We'll get into that definitely in Shadow Strays.
Well, and also The Night Comes for Us, because The Night Comes for Us and The Shadow Strays feel like they exist in basically the same exact universe. Like, one could be happening down the block from the other.
No, totally. Well, they're comic book worlds,
too. Well, and also, it's his comic book, Jakarta.
Yeah.
Which, Timo's Jakarta, this is probably the best place to pivot to Gareth Evans's movies, is that Timo's Jakarta feels like an extension of the Jakarta that is profiled in The Raid and The Rain 2.
Yeah.
You know, how do you say it? Burrendal is
the second movie.
So The Raid and The Raid 2, my theory is that they walked so Timo 100%. Could run.
I was thinking the exact same thing watching these.
Because after we went and saw The Night Comes for Us again at a Weird Wednesday screening, you know, I went back and watched The Raid, and that was kind of like the inspiration for this episode, is that like, you know, this is no diss against The Raid whatsoever, because The Raid is still a fucking mind melter of a movie and like has left its imprint on action cinema for like the rest of time.
I mean, Dread is basically The Raid.
Yeah.
You know, like other movies just took the whole setup.
But it's also just like, just the way that action is shot.
Yeah.
The bone crunching kind of violence that Evans indulges in the same way that Timo looks like almost feels like he watched The Raid and The Raid 2 and was like, that's great, but hold my beer. I'm going to up the ante on how violent this can actually be. And like The Raid, I guess for those of you who haven't seen this classic martial arts movie and are listening to a cult film podcast, it's very, very simple. And you have the two stars from The Night Comes for Us and Joe Taslim and Iko Uwe.
Who were nobodies, basically.
Who were nobodies at the time. Yeah. I had never seen Iko or Joe.
Well, and Joe came from nowhere. Like, he had been in, like, nothing before. My understanding is he kind of came there like, we need people. And he got his kind of leading role. Iko had done Marin Tao before.
Because that's the thing is, Marin Tao, you can group Timo and Gareth's movies in a very particular way in that Marin Tao feels like the dry run, like him almost doing a director's reel in order to kind of beef up his skills, because that also features Iko Uwe. But I didn't actually watch that movie until after I had seen The Raid.
Oh, really? I saw
it
before. Yes.
Oh, no shit.
My brother, he and
I
are always...
Look at you, hipster-ass motherfucker.
No, my brother, though, he and I are always on the lookout. Before I knew you, he'd be like, there's a new martial art. He's the one who told me to watch Ong Bak. And then he was like, you got to watch this Marin Tao, anything from Southeast Asia or Asia. We're like, he's like, this is the new shit.
Yeah.
And so that he just like, yeah, you got to watch Marin Tao. And then I was like, and it was on Prime for free.
Okay.
You know, kind of thing. And yeah.
And Marin Tao feels rough. It's like,
it feels like the same plot as the first Ong Bak or Protector.
Right.
It's the same thing. The
streets.
Well, no, but no, he's from like the jungle. He's like, he's a rural kid who comes to the city. He's very naive, but also is a master in Sealot.
Well, because that's the other thing we have to talk about is nobody had really ever seen Sealot on screen before that. And
it was like Muay Thai for Ong Bak. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And Sealot is mostly defined by its use of blades, weapons, and how fast and many times you can punch a person, essentially.
And I do know it was part of what they used for creating the fighting style of the Nolan Batman movies. Sealot was one of them. A lot of just like, you're incapacitating your opponent as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Like, working down the body.
Yeah, you're hitting them, particularly in the midsection, as many times, like almost using your opponent as a punching bag, but then you're also using knives, but not necessarily just stabbing them to death once. You're like hitting them a million times. It's almost like needling somebody.
Yeah, shivin, yeah.
Exactly. But Marin Tao, it's like this poor kid from essentially the streets, the hood of the, you know, these poor kind of rural places, comes, is naive, and then gets into an adventure a lot the same way that Ong Bak does. But like, Evans then abandons that very traditional martial arts setup and goes into an urban environment with The Raid, and he makes, you know, this movie about this SWAT team essentially going into this building that more or less gives safe haven to drug addicts, killers, and all these dealers who are in the employ of this one big, you know, crime boss.
Yeah.
Who lives
at
the top of it.
Yeah,
exactly.
The final boss kind of
thing. He's the mega city one, like, ruler.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, the SWAT team comes in. They're led by Joe Taslim. Iko Uwe is, you know, almost like a very young cop who's just working and is kind of anonymous almost. And so they just work their way up. There's no plot to the movie, really, outside of, like, this team goes in, they got to work their way up level by level. The drug dealer, like, Kingpin sicks his goons on them. And as they go up, it has like video game logic kind of, to where it's just level by level, they meet new challenges. All of a sudden on one, it's like dudes with machine guns. On the other, it's like that fucking machete wielding gang who comes after them. And then you have Mad Dog, who earns his name, who's the great fighter. The other one who, like, if you have the trio of guys who come out of The Raid, is Yayhan Ruhian, who,
and he's one of the main choreographers too.
Yes,
I believe, right? Because he, you'll see him on set for all of that stuff,
and he's incredible.
He's insane.
The way he fights, like every time he hits somebody in the original Raid, like you feel it as a viewer because you're like, I don't know how that guy's still standing because he just punched him five times harder than I've ever seen anybody get hit in my life.
Yeah, I remember when I first saw it, I saw it in the theater with my buddy John. I think Steve was there as well, and it played at this like little art theater in Atlanta. And I had seen trailers for it, and it was already in like the nerd sites. Is like, you know, it had played some festivals. Like, this is the movie to look out for. And I remember we like sat down, and I had already seen Marantown. I'm like, oh, and I didn't realize it until I sat down. I'm like, oh, I think this is the guy who did that Marantown movie. And holy shit, like, agreed. Like, now that we're looking at it in hindsight, you know, post-Teemo, you know, it's definitely not as violent. I think, though, what I find that sets Gareth Evans apart is it's a lot more acrobatic. It seems much more acrobatic to me, especially with Ico. I'm thinking of the scene, the classic shot of him falling back and impaling the guy's neck.
Oh, yeah.
Like that, those in the wide shot. Like, there's a lot of stuff like that that Gareth does really, really well.
Well, I think the big difference between Gareth Evans and Teemo is more defined in The Raid 2, Burrentown.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Gareth basically takes the success of The Raid and is like, I'm going to make a crime epic, and makes this almost 2.5 hour sprawling Godfather-esque sort of martial arts crime underworld melodrama. That's honestly, I referenced The Godfather, but the thing that it's the most in league with is like the Infernal Affairs films.
Yep.
Or even like The Departed, which is a remake of Infernal Affairs. It's very much an undercover cop movie. Guy infiltrates a crime boss's empire. You know, his son is coming up and wants to take control of power. He begins like basically a shadow war against their rivals, who are like these Japanese Yakuza. And caught in the middle is yet again Iko Uwe, who has to maintain his identity as basically this guy who went to jail for assaulting a politician's son.
Yeah,
I want to say
who had been integral in getting the guy he's trying to get close to into jail.
Yes.
So it's kind of like his end.
It's retribution.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a way that he makes his mark so that the guy's son basically notices him. And then he works his way up, becomes an enforcer for this crime boss, and this crime boss's son's like right-hand man and like looks after him, but then ends up waging war against both sides, more or less.
Yeah.
And in a just absolute bloodbath that takes up the second half of the movie. But where you can see the difference between Evans and Teemo is that Evans, his compositions are much more stately.
Yeah.
There's a stillness to the way he sets things up, and he has a very defined sense of cool, is that it's these slimy dudes existing in these very baroque neon-lit clubs and eating at elegant dinners while having, like, knives at their side and are able to, like, basically take out a whole row of dudes as, like, an offering to, like, their rivals or the people that they're trying to make ties with. But he shoots it all in, like, tableau before allowing the violence and the set pieces to kind of explode. And even with the explosions of violence that he perpetrates, you know, they're much more controlled than Teemo's, so where Teemo exists in chaos.
Yep, 100%. Yeah.
Everything, even like his setups, you're almost always joining whatever's happening in media res and then finding out how we got here after the fact. Like, The Night Comes for Us is entirely in media res. Like, we don't find out about the massacre, like the full truth of it, until like 30 minutes into the movie, and then you go, oh, okay, so this is why this guy's on the run with this kid. And it's all like, even his character intros, where like the character intros for Gareth's movies is that like it'll be like dudes sitting in tables and like, to your point, in wide shots and stuff, and like they almost seem like figurines, like very Michael Mann-esque. They're posing, sort of, to where like, if you contrast that against, like, say, Eco's introduction in The Night Comes for Us when it's in the club. It's literally just that pulsing techno music. We find Eco, he's in the back of the club, and then boom, before you even know it, he's like shoving a bottle through a guy's face, and you're like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? But it's like, both are so awesome, but one feels like it's vying for a certain type of respectability, to where Timo's just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what splatters best.
Yeah, well, and Timo also, I mean, we said before, it's this comic book Jakarta world, and his characters are so much more, I think, amazingly archetypal, because you have, specifically, I think of White Boy Bobby in Night Comes For Us, you know, and you have,
and his
like,
one leg.
But also the assassins who come are so much more flamboyant than what you get in any Gareth Evans film that I've seen. You know, there's so much more. You think about you get Hammer Girl, Julia Estelle, and her brother or her friend, the guy with the baseball bat. That's like the limit of that kind of comic booky world. You think of that times 10. What Timo does in his films of just like the two the lesbian assassin women, you know.
Well, and also Yayan comes back in The Raid too and plays essentially like a homeless assassin. He feels somewhat comic booky as well.
Yeah,
but and it's like still, but it still that feels whole club going sequence where he gets in that fucking war against all those thugs, and it looks like the club from Another 48 Hours.
Yeah,
but like yeah. You're totally right, but again, it's the difference between like walking and running, right? Is that, you know, Gareth Evans walks so Timo can run. It's almost like Timo saw Hammer Girl and her baseball bat wielding friend and was like, that's neat, but like I got something for you. And then he redoes Johnny Toe's The Heroic Trio with the operator Julia, and brings Julia Estelle back into The Night Comes for Us's world. And just, she enters on a fucking motorcycle with like a machine gun and then gets into like a three-way fight with two lesbian assassins, one of which looks like she's straight out of a lost Kill Bill sequel.
Oh, yeah.
And like, they recreate Johnny Toe's The Heroic Trio, but The Heroic Trio is just killing each other. And dude, that fight might be, I like, this is my hottest take. I think that's the greatest screen fright of like the last 25 years. It's the one I revisit the most. And when we saw it in the theater, I sat straight up in my seat and was
I saw you.
Holy fucking shit. This is just, it's amazing. The way he choreographs it and follows it with his camera and uses the music in particular to signal certain beats, like the action tells like three different stories inside of this like 7-minute fight sequence, and it's absolutely thrilling. And then like just the way he paces it too, with like, you know, once he the operator kills the first lover, the Japanese one, you know, ties her like bolo,
her Garrett wire
to the air conditioner, kicks it out, and it ends up strangling her to death and even cutting off all of her fingers on like her right hand. It's so awesome. And then takes on her lover, and then her lover, they war together, and then there's that move, that moment of stillness where they stop, and then the fucking fly flies past them and hits the little fly buzzer, and then they resume like fighting again. The way he paces it, it's so fucking incredible. Like, I just find that scene incredible, just thrilling beyond words.
I think to that point though, we were talking after seeing that again in the theater, is what really stands out about Timo is that he is such a fan of all types of martial art movies that it feels similar to how you watch like Tarantino, and it's like, oh, this dialogue is from this. This type of scene is from this. Here's a guy who is like pulling from
He's a remix artist.
John Woo. He's pulling heroic. He's pulling Wuxia stuff in there. He's pulling Muay Thai scenes. He does fucking Donnie Yen style like machine gun fists. Like, it's just the vocabulary he has and the team he has. Because I know he's not the choreographer, but it's like he's working with this team to be like, here's the type of shit I like. And like you said, it's a remix of just all the best shit.
So the choreographer is a guy named Mohammed Ifran, and he starts working with him on both this and The Shadow Strays, and I believe also The Big Four, which is Timo's other big martial arts movie. But he doesn't work with him on Headshot, which is like one of the last Mo Brothers movies that Timo works on and co-directs. And you can tell the difference because Headshot is almost like his Marantau.
Yeah.
To where it's the dry run. It also stars Ico again. Yeah. And like Headshot feels like him being like, okay, I can do the same type of martial arts as Gareth Evans, but how do I get there? And Muhammad is the one who kind of comes in and like is like, okay, cool. Let me choreograph the fights. You just do your insane camera work. And when we meet in the middle, that's when the real magic happens, you know, because Headshot and Marantau feel like the seeds for what would come next. Like Marantau, you know, allows Evans to really kind of sharpen his skills and then be able to make the Raid movies. And then Headshot leads to The Night Comes for Us and The Shadow Strays. But the other movie that's kind of in between is, I know the one that you didn't get a chance to see, which is Killers, which is one of the Mo Brothers movies that Timo makes, which isn't an action movie at all. And it's closer to like almost like a South Korean horror movie from like the mid to like 2010s. The closest comparison I have in my head is I Saw the Devil, you know, but it doesn't have that movie's same manic sense of style, violence, or humor, frankly. It's like Killers is insanely grim. And the other movie it reminded me of, it's not as good as this movie, mind you, but it's another one of our favorite films from this year, is Red Rooms. Because it's about two guys looking at screens through each other, but it's about one guy is a serial killer in Tokyo who discovers this disgruntled reporter and disgraced reporter who threw a freak encounter ends up killing a couple guys inside of a cab and films it and puts it online because the other killer in Tokyo is also like filming his videos, but he's very much like he abducts women, takes them back to his lair, tortures and murders them, beats them to death with a hammer. This movie's very fucking gnarly. And so they start this online relationship where the killer from Tokyo essentially recognizes like, oh, you're like me, you just haven't gotten there yet. And so he almost becomes sort of like a weird online mentor to this guy, to where they start talking through like private dark web chat rooms and everything. And like as he begins to pursue, the reporter begins to pursue like his life and murder, we'll say. But it presents Jakarta again, because the reporter's in Indonesia and Jakarta again, and he's pursuing and has been disgraced by this corrupt politician. But this land of like perverts, psychos, and like a broken system, you know, and the main politician that he's pursuing is played by the same actor who plays the crime lord in The Raid. Because Evans actually produced Killers through Marantau Films. So, but I think the Killers is key, like the Raid movies is key to understanding kind of the worldview of Timo, in that it's not just about the violence, but it's about the sadism. But the sadism is almost bred because of the environment that these people exist in, because it's nothing but corrupt politicians, perverts, drug dealers, terrible pimps, cops, everything. And it's like Timo and Gareth, to a certain degree, are very much showing you a Jakarta that's just decaying from a cancer that's rooted itself inside and will never let go. Like, this is just the world. And like, it almost seems like they're saying, if you make it out of this city alive, you're lucky, but you're probably also not escaping unscathed. So like, when we talk about the violence inside of The Night Comes for Us, The Shadow Strays, and The Big Four is the other one that I think is like a very key movie in Timo's kind of oeuvre is that Timo's almost saying that, like, you have to, if you're met with this level of, like, corruption and decay, the only way to combat it is to almost, like, drive into it head on screaming, like Joe Taslim does at the end of The Night Comes for Us, and just meet it with the same amount of force and hope that you're able to steal some kind of innocence away from, like, the jaws of evil. Because, like, all of his movies kind of follow the same exact plot line. Like, The Night Comes for Us is about a rogue assassin, like, taking a child away from, like, a village massacre. The Big Four is about a police officer inside of a corrupt, you know, police force, quitting that police force, joining up with essentially, like, Timo's version of the A-Team to investigate the murder of her father at the hands of, like, again, another, like, crime syndicate and, like, cartoonishly, like, kind of huge big bad in that movie. And then The Shadow Strays, for me, is, like, the ultimate version of that, is that it's literally about a girl who doesn't even have a name. She's just a number. She's 13. And, like, she's bred, it's like his Black Widow. It's like she's bred to be an assassin inside of this secret organization called the Shadows, who do nothing. Like, they even say it directly in the movie. They're like, we are bred to neutralize. We don't negotiate. We don't investigate. We're sent in, and we're just sent in to kill, you know? And it's about her during her time where she's essentially suspended from that force, finding this kid that she tries to rescue from, like, this den of filth, and again, rip him and save some kind of piece of humanity and steal it away from, like, these evil forces that are, like, surrounding them and just infecting the city. And in a weird way, you could almost view the violence inside of Timo's movies as being, like, hopeful in a way, in that it's almost like, in order to combat this, you have to meet it with the same amount of aggression.
Well, yeah, I mean, in a movie's an action film was only as good as its villain, right? And so, right. You know,
and man, the villains in these movies are fucking awesome.
Well, they're awesome, but they're just so hateable.
Oh, yeah.
Know? They're the most, especially with, like, Shadow Strays, you have this trio of guys who grew up together, and one is this, like, first time you see him, he's in tidy whiteys watching his friend, like, viciously kind of rape a woman. It's pretty fucked up.
A prostitute.
Yeah, prostitute. And then another guy wears,
well, it's Haji's mom.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have then a guy basically wearing a gimp mask, looking like Black Mask from Batman. And you have the other guy who's just this stringy haired pimp who's just getting women. Like, you just see him injecting. It was like the most horrible fucking guys. And you have Manji, who's this kid whose mom.
No, that's right. Manji.
Yeah. And, Manji's mom is become, she's a drug addict and also a prostitute, and, you know, very sweetly, 13 is, I think, obviously the not profound symbolism. She didn't have a childhood, so she's, you know, finding and protecting this innocent boy.
And it's also implied, I think, that the Shadows aren't able, again, to bring it back to Black Widow.
They can't get pregnant.
Yeah, it feels like they're forcefully sterilized.
They say it later on.
Program. They don't directly say it. They almost, like, allude to it.
Well, because the woman's pregnant, and they say that's not possible.
Well, it's a miracle. But yeah. That's what I mean, that they don't say it, but you're almost, like, inferring, like, okay, so that means that you guys are probably sterilized and you're not allowed to have children at all.
Yeah.
And that now you're bred to just kill again. But again, it's about people who are bred to take life and not bring it into the world. And, like, yeah, 13 becomes the vessel through which she could never have a child, you know, in her entire life. So she adopts Manji, you know, off the street, buys him noodles and everything, and rides on the motorcycle together, and then he's stolen away, again, by the son of a corrupt politician. You know, and it's just, it's this institutional rot that obviously, like, Evans and Timo both see inside of Jakarta, that they almost have to invent these superheroes to combat it, because it's never going to be defeated otherwise.
It does feel righteous.
Yeah.
You know, all of the violence in these films feels very righteous and chaotic. And you think about, you know, so my favorite scene, I think, that Timo's ever done is the apartment attack with White Boy Bobby and the machetes in Night Comes For Us.
Oh God, it's so
because
awesome.
while you have the fight, the amazing fight with the three women in the apartment, that is like this amazingly choreographed, like you're saying, these amazing action beats.
It also features Julia Stelle being the hottest woman who has ever graced
on the
planet.
I mean, it's just an agreement. But you,
I never knew that she was Hammer Girl until this
yeah.
go round of watching these movies again.
And she's also in Headshot. She's the other.
Oh,
she's
I've
the other lead.
That's
in
the
Headshot.
Only movie I didn't get to revisit. In
yeah,
Hobart.
I believe it's her in that too. But you have.
I love her so much.
But the machete scene, I think, like, that's where Timo, like you're saying, he has different modes too. And like when he goes full chaos mode, that is so hard. I can only imagine how hard it is to film something
and how
like
long
that.
It would take. You're talking about weeks of filming.
Weeks. I mean, there's the over the head shot of all the guys coming through the door and they have the table. There's blocking. They're just slicing over the top of the table. And just like completely the feeling of being outnumbered. Like he creates that so well.
Well, Gareth does that in The Raid too. Very in that well. Amazing sequence where those guys are all trapped and they
yes.
shoot through the floor and drop in and the guys are coming in after them.
Yeah.
Like they do the same thing. And then Eco fucking rips the fridge out of the wall and puts the gas in and blows it up to like blow that out the side. That shit is fucking awesome.
Yes.
Dude.
Well, I think that's what also sets a movie like The Raid and Gareth, especially the first Raid, away from Timo's films is the tight pitch, you know, like Ray
yeah.
has this great, if someone was like, hey, like I had to explain the plot of Night Comes For Us. It's not complicated, but it's like more involved versus the Raid is like, imagine just this, like dudes go into like a tenement building to clean it out. They get trapped. It's almost like it's a siege movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and you could also say that The Shadow Strays is the Raid 2 to The Night Comes For Us.
Much more expansive.
One, you know,
yes.
because The Shadow Strays creates an even bigger world where you have these assassins. It literally opens in Japan in the suicide forest
yeah.
at this Yakuza boss's lair. And essentially what's, to bring it back to your point about how he's, you know, Timo's kind of like a sample artist to where he's picking and choosing from like different martial arts movies that he obviously loves. Like he basically gets to open The Shadow Strays with his House of Blue Leaves sequence.
Yeah.
It's, you know, 13 and her mentor like breaking into this Yakuza boss's house again in the middle of him more or less raping a geisha and then taking out his entire clan in this incredible sequence that involves everything from samurai swords to grenades to machine guns. And then when she goes predator night vision and starts headshotting those dudes, like the first time we were watching this, my soul fucking exited my body.
No,
I was like,
you
this
saw
is
me,
the greatest
you
movie
saw me
I've
lose
ever seen.
It.
Yeah.
I go, what?
Yeah. Like, and I'd already seen this movie like three times before you had seen it. And I was just waiting. And I just heard you go, what is happening? And it's just like, but yeah, he does that so well, and he builds this world out so well, but he does it kind of like in the way that we were talking about with the shorthand of like these girls can't, these assassins can't give birth or anything. Nobody ever says that. Just in the same way to where it's like, you know, we know that these cops and stuff, when they come in later in The Shadow Strays, like they're definitely in league with the politicians and stuff, but like, he never says that. It's just like, he just lets you infer it and watch the relationships kind of build in front of you. He doesn't, and neither does Gareth. It's kind of where The Raid 2 bogs down like a little bit, is that when they try to do exposition, it gets a little too chatty for its own good. Because again, like, these movies are working on an elemental storytelling level that, like, I don't need you to explain it to me. Okay, undercover cop, one crime clan against another crime clan. There's probably undercover moles in there, too, that he's going to discover along the way. Boom. Just let it rip, man. And Timo kind of wisely learned from Gareth's mistakes to where he's like, okay, when I make my expansive kind of comic book movie, nobody's going to explain shit. You're just going to figure it out as it goes along, because I'm going to tell the story in a pure visual cinematic sense.
Well, and to your point earlier, too, is, you know, Gareth has he's going for a classier. He wants to have a little bit higher brow nature, especially to The Raid 2. But I don't think he hits it. You know, and I like the Raid 2.
I think he does for the most part, but then he just sort of says, fuck it, in the back half.
Oh, exactly. But I think leading up to that, part of the reason why I first saw it, I'm like, eh, I mean, because you have him, you're saying, doing Infernal Affairs, and Infernal Affairs just does it better.
Yeah.
It is twistier, turnier, but that's the movie.
It's almost the same exact plot.
But it's just done better, and you're actually like, oh, versus like, with this one, I'm kind of like, but this is a martial art film, get to the fight. Like,
yeah.
I'm not watching. I don't want to watch Tinker Tailor here, brother. You know, that's why I'm not why I'm here.
Now, did you ever watch Gangs of London?
Oh, yeah. I actually rewatched some scenes.
Yeah.
The scene.
Yeah. I was going to say, when we were talking about the siege sequences, that massacre that's like episode five or six. Oh, was it episode four?
At
the farmhouse?
Or. Well, there's a farm. I'm talking about the one at
or the gypsy camp.
The gypsy camp.
Okay, so you have the gypsy camp, which is almost holding that one take machine gun massacre. I'm talking about the farmhouse,
which I saw as well,
where they're trying to extract the kid, you know, who's in hiding, and you have that team of mercs that come in and they're dropping in through the ceiling and
Jesus.
Shit. That sequence is amazing, but like Gangs of London does the thing that you're talking about too, because it also has like all of these great British actors working. Because the one thing we haven't said is that Gareth Evans is a Welsh dude working in fucking Indonesia. It's almost like he, and I think he's even said this because I interviewed him once. And he was talking about how it was like hard for any kind of film work to get done where he was working. So he was like, but in Indonesia, there's this whole film scene that's kind of untapped. I'm just going to go do that. And that's where he basically made his name. And then he comes back and he makes Gangs of London. And he has guys like Joe Cole and shit in
yep.
it. And it's like Gangs of London is a pretty standard, again, like sweeping crime tale about like warring crime families and everything. But it's just told with Gareth Evans's use of action again. And it allows him to really like go ape shit on like a prestige TV level with all the set pieces that now he's allowed to be afforded through like Sky TV and AMC.
Well, it kind of reminds me of like not to make you mad again, but like.
Great.
With John Woo doing a film like Wind Talkers, which I think requires a softer touch.
Why would this make me mad? I love Wind Talkers.
I don't.
God.
And but the reasoning I think is that for that type of story, the hokiness doesn't work for me, and it feels very, very hokey to me. Versus like I'm totally love it with like Face Off.
I'm not gonna yell at you. Because this isn't a John Woo podcast, but I get where you're going with it.
Right.
Because it's his love of melodrama and stuff.
Exactly.
It just doesn't work inside of this war movie that you're watching for you.
Well,
for
especially
me,
the same
I
era,
love that movie.
Not too far off of like Thin Red Line and like Saving Private Ryan and these like, you know, it just more realistic. Not to like put in this, but I feel like when I watch a war movie, like I'm expecting that kind of realism. And this is very 1950s.
Yeah, and like he's doing movie. John Woo shit inside of a war film.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's where it gets weird. But I mean that in the sense that, like, with Woo, a lot of times I am like, I like his character stuff. I like that when it's the melodramatic and it works together in that type of movie. Like,
sure.
The Killer makes me emotional. Like,
yeah.
The Hard Boiled makes me emotional. Their relationship. There's just things that really get to me. I mean, fucking Bullet to the Head makes me emotional.
Well, I'm glad that you actually said this, though, because, like, I will say that's the thing that's weird about Timo's movies, in particular, The Night Comes for Us and Shadow Strays. Shadow Strays even more so than Night Comes for Us is that I get, like, choked up at
yep.
certain scenes, and it'll be a scene of, like, a guy getting his eyes gouged out, and I'll be on the verge of tears, but it's because, again, of this non-expositional way that he allows these characters to very primally express emotions to where, like, you know, there's the whole amazing apartment battle where 13 takes on all of those masked
cops. To save Jackie.
Yeah, to save Jackie and to get him out so they can go find Manji. And she kills all these dudes in horrifically graphic fashion, chases the last one, the main like corrupt cop out as he's going to meet the politician's son. They hit her with a car, seemingly knock her out where she's on the ground in this parking garage. And like, you know, the politician's like, no, don't kill her. We're going to basically try and bring her in and use her as a weapon inside of our organization. And the corrupt cop leans down, picks her up in his arms, and starts whispering horrible shit to her about like what he's going to do to her. And she wakes up, and the music kicks in. She like bites his ear off, flips him over, smashes his head, and then gouges his eyes out. But the scream that she lets out like hits me like deep in my stomach, because it's just, you can feel her just letting out like years upon years of like psychic pain as she takes it out on this guy. And it just, it gets to me just in the same way that like, now this is more in like the heroic bloodshed mode, like a very classic mode of like Hong Kong filmmaking. But that final fight between Joe Taslim and Iko Uwe in The Night Comes for Us, like, gets me genuinely emotional, because it becomes about two friends who have loved each other the entire life, like bleeding each other out until neither one of them has anything left. And then Joe Taslim literally driving into a army of guys with machine guns and screaming, like that final scream that he lets out again, like that's the way that these people like express their emotions inside of Timo's movies, is that like the scream he lets out, well, that version of Lowe's
that song, you made me the monster,
murderer. He lets out that scream right as that version, which I've been able to find sort of the version, but because I love Low and I love Murderer, the song, that whole album is amazing. But on the album, that final, like almost shoegazy, like rock part of it that kicks in over the end credits of Over the Night Comes for Us, that's not in the original album version. The original album version is just this very buzzy, almost ambient rising, like reminds me a lot of like Liars music from the mid 2000s. And like, I've always wanted to find this version of the song, because like he lets out that scream and then that shoegaze part of the song like kicks in, and then it's just directed by Timo, and you're like, dude, this movie fucking rules, man.
Well, he does it at the end with Shadow Strays with M83 as well.
Yeah.
You know, he just gets this needle drop, and it's very similar, and it's a very emotional thing about, it's very similar, these two people who were friends, or, you know, she was basically her mother, you know, and raised her and trained her teacher, and then they had to fight to basically the death, then she ends up saving her, you know, and you had that just moment of her finally having the memory of when she took her.
As they burn her village down.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, which is interesting, it's almost like the beginning of Night Comes for Us, of Joe saving the girl. You know, it's the cyclical, you know, thing. She saved her, she saved Monji, so it's like, ends up really sticking the landing in a really beautiful way.
I think The Big Four does something very similar too, because that movie becomes about this found family of people who are again combating a corrupt system inside of Jakarta and everything. And it essentially becomes like Timo's A-team. Like,
yeah,
that is the thing, is that like he tries to do action comedy with The Big Four, and I think it's mostly successful. I quite like that movie. And I know a lot of people do not. And I know that you're a little more mixed on it than I am.
I think if I came in blind and didn't know his team, it would be a different story.
Okay.
Because it kind of feel, I think I was
you expect
off,
something
I was
else
saying
from
off
him.
Mike, it kind of felt like Good, the Bad, and the Weird.
Yeah. Or that's a great comparison.
Or Stephen Chow. You know, kind of like without the broad kind of comedic vibe, without, but then it goes to the uber violence.
Honestly, the guy it reminds me the most of is Joe Carnahan.
That, well, the A-Team.
The A-Team. It really reminds me of the A-Team movie, like right down to even the archetypes of like, here's this collection of mercenaries who operate like under the radar. Here's this rogue cop who joins them. They're going after, you know, her dad's killer. But again, it's about these people combating and finding love inside of like this world of violence and pain and perversion that is Jakarta. And it's his version of like hopefulness.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I really like about The Big Four, is that it is light, it is funny, it is goofy. Is it totally different tonally from The Shadow Strays and Night Comes for Us? 100%. But at the same time, when the action fucking pops off in Big Four, it's the same thing, man. Like, the violence in it is still just as wet and nasty as anything else he's done.
Which makes it, like, really interestingly discordant, because there's moments where it's like the humor is so like, hey, you're pointing the rocket launcher the wrong way, and the next scene is them literally just like blasting guns, shooting a guy in the head 8 times while his head breaks apart. You're like, okay.
Yeah. It's like that car chase at the end of the Raid 2, you know, where that motorcyclist is hanging on the side of the car and the dude takes an Italian pistol and basically shoots him 20 times in the face. It's like if that guy were making like your mom jokes in the middle of doing that.
Yes.
But I like the Big Four. I think the Big Four is pretty great. And the Big Four is also the movie that I said this to you off, Mike, is that, you know, Timo's making Nobody 2 with Bob Odenkirk. It's his big American debut.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, and he was up. I don't know if up for, but rumored to be possibly making Blade.
Which isn't probably happening at all anymore.
Yeah, that they should just stop with that. They'll eventually make it, and like Bill Sarsgaard will be Blade. You know what I mean? Like, it'll happen in 10 years when America is like, you know, like Pangea after whatever Trump does to it next. And like, they're like, Blade's the only movie playing in the last 10 movie theaters that exist, but somehow Timo still found a way to like make it. But it's with Bill. It's not even Bill Sarsgaard. It's probably like an AI representation of Bill Sarsgaard from The Crow. But I don't, yeah, the movie's never going to be, but like, you watch The Big Four and you go, okay, this guy can make a Hollywood movie. He fits making Nobody and Nobody 2 and working with Bob Odenkirk and working with the same dude who made the John Wick films. Like, he fits in that universe. Give him the reins.
Yeah, and I think also that just, like, you have a little more comedic timing stuff. Also, you have...
It's colorful.
Well, it's colorful, but also it's comedic action. There are some moments of Jackie Chan-esque kind of physicality, especially the scene where he's trying to hide the bodies, these guys he's killed, from the police officer when she first comes to the hotel.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's fucking funny. I could see that Bob Odenkirk scene, like, oh, I can't let anyone know what I'm really doing. Kind of, he's playing the normal guy.
He's hiding it from his family.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And so the sleeper agent kind of vibe. This goes without saying, I am beyond excited for Nobody 2. You and I will be there as early as fucking possible.
Did you like the first Nobody?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. It's not great, but it's pretty good.
No, I mean, it's the bus fight is great.
Yeah.
There's plenty of, like, kind of showstopper, like, Bob holds himself well, you know?
I also like, so my big take on Nobody, and then we'll get to questions, is that I like Nobody from the angle that it's about a dude who used to be a killer and has kind of like become this domesticated guy, more or less, not quite a cuck, but like,
yeah,
he's a sleeping dog, let's say. And he finally gets a taste for violence again. And is like, you know what? Fuck this. This is what I'm going to do from now on. And just embraces that. That's who he is. Like, I like that as a concept for a movie, because like, it's, I don't want to say weirdly relatable, but like, it resonates on a weird thematic level that you're kind of like, okay, that's interesting. And you can expand upon that. Like, you could see there being like 3 or 4 Nobody films as he just continues building on that.
Yeah. Always made me think of History of Violence, but like a more fun,
yeah,
you know, this guy's got this hidden part to himself.
Kind of thing. Chad Stahelski's History of Violence. You want to get to questions?
Yes.
All right. Questions about The Night Comes for Us. Martin, ranking these movies seems like an impossible task. So what we decided to do instead was to pick our top three set pieces. You're going to go first.
I would say, not rank, but in my top three is the butcher shop.
Yeah, which we didn't even really touch on.
Yeah, I just realized we hadn't talked about it. And I think that was the scene that when I saw that movie where I was like, oh, shit. Because like before that, there had been stuff, but that was that's one of the first big fights in the movie.
I think it is the first. Well, if you don't count Ico's introduction.
Which is cool, but it's still like...
It's very brief.
Yeah, you don't get a lot. He breaks the bottle in the guy's face or into his mouth.
Again, it's a great pacing thing to where like you get a snippet of what Ico can do. And we already are familiar with him from other movies. So as soon as you see Ico in this, you're like, oh shit, what's he going to do next? And then he fucks up a room of dudes in a club.
Yeah, I would say that's in my top three.
Shop is great.
Yeah, that's just fucking awesome. I would say for the raid, honestly, just in terms of like also just a first time experience, like with the hallway fight in the raid, like where it's just Ico alone taking on like 20 dudes. And that's just like the most amazing choreography of like, you know, sometimes in martial art films, you have the extra henchmen standing on the side, like kind of waiting.
There's none of that.
It's like him being attacked by like 20 people.
Well, and it's also Gareth uses the overhead camera really well in that.
Yeah.
That Timo also steals from him a little bit to where like he has an amazing sense of coverage to where it's like, if I shoot it from this angle, you don't get any of the like, here's an extra hanging out, here's a stunt guy, like, kind of off to the side. It feels like everybody's involved and everybody's, like, getting impacted all at once.
Yeah. And then I would just say Another Night Comes for Us. Like I said before, it would be the machete just in the
White Boy Bobby.
White Boy Bobby. Everything with White Boy Bobby. And it's just like...
White Boy Bobby's such a great character in that. That look he gives the girl before he puts him on the elevator of like, I got this, and you know he's gonna die. It's pretty heartbreaking.
No, he takes a fucking beating.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
The man only has one leg.
That's
the car chase, which we haven't really hit on at the end of the raid 2.
Yeah, that was top five at least. Yeah.
Where, you know, Rama saves Eki, I believe is the other undercover cop's name. And that's the star of Killers.
Mm.
He's the main journalist who's our main character in Killers, and he's quite good in it. That one's awesome because like the way it evolves to where you have the car chase itself. And there's also that insane behind-the-scenes video. I don't know if you've ever seen of how they filmed it, to where they're taking seats out of the car while it's running so they can move the camera through. They have dudes, like, hanging on the side and, like, passing the camera around so it can go in and out of, like, the car. It's pretty incredible. But then you have the car chase itself. You have the gunplay between the car and the motorcycles and stuff going on. You have the fight inside of the car where Ico's stuck in the backseat, like beating the shit out of people. You have the fucking crash when it takes out that hole. It's almost like a bus stop.
Yeah, the metal box thing.
It's incredible. Yeah. Like, you can't. It's one of those crashes that's on screen where it happens and you go, I don't believe that nobody died doing that.
Yeah.
Like, that's full scale actual destruction. I think that set piece is like, that might be the best Gareth Evans set piece ever. It ranks at the very least.
That feels like dick on the table. You know, he's like, look what I can do.
Well, and it's also like the movie, again, to go back to the idea of Gareth being this very stately director and existing in tableau, when the invite, like, all of the first half outside of like, you know, the prison yard fight,
great
in the
fight.
Mud. The Yayan Ruhian's fight in the club, like they're spaced out pretty well, but it's pretty plot heavy.
Yep.
And then the explosion is just literally the last 45 minutes to an hour of the raid 2, where it's right when Rama is like, fuck this, I'm just going, like, heat-seeking missile on anybody that's in my way. And, like, the last hour is just basically straight-up action. That fucking warehouse set piece where he drives the car, like, through the garage door and then kills everybody. He's fucking throwing those fucking water bottles at people and shit. That's fucking awesome, man. Like, it's hard to not just be in awe of, like, the straight-up bodily damage that people are having done to them. So the car chase would be a big one for me from Raid 2. I've already mentioned, I mean, my number one is the three-way heroic trio fight. I've watched that scene so many times. I've lost count. But I mean, the other huge one too, and this one feels more in league with the Raid 2 than anything else, is the machine gun battle at the end of the Shadow Strays.
Oh, yeah.
That concludes with 13 fighting the politician's, like, gimp-masked son in the white Scarface suit as he's snorting pounds of cocaine, shooting a fucking rocket like, it's not even a rocket, it's like a grenade.
It's a grenade launcher underneath a machine gun
at people. She's driving that fucking car in circles, taking all those bullets, and it ends with the baseball bat fight. It's like, that's pretty incredible. So that would be two. Three, I would probably go with the Joe Taslim warehouse fight in The Night Comes
Before.
For Us. Yeah, where he takes on all those dudes. Yeah, that's the other one that's tough too. The Joe Taslim Iko Uwe fight that ends the movie.
I mean, that's
that goes
an
on forever is like an all-timer one-on-one battle, but that's more of a fight than a set piece, I guess. It's still technically a set piece, but it's more one-on-one. But, I mean, him taking on all those dudes and beating that one dude's face in with the fucking cue ball like Steven Seagal in Out for Justice, that shit's fucking
awesome. That felt purposeful, too.
Yeah.
That felt another moment of him, like, winking at
like, you've seen this before, but this is my gross part of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, then there's the thing of it. He has, like, the hair hanging off of it after.
Oh, yeah, because like, he has the whole sack of balls so that he's just been taking dudes' jaws off. Like,
no, it's the fucking he rips off the
sack of balls
off the
the actual. But I mean, Seagal does that too.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh no, because Seagal like basically takes the cue ball and swings it inside of a little towel and then starts whacking people. He takes the whole fucking like bag of balls from like the corner of the corner pocket of the pool table and just starts crushing skulls with it. I mean, look. Here's the thing that's incredible about all these movies. You're not wrong. Whatever you pick, if you were like you just said to me the hallway fight, I'm like, yeah, sure. That's 100%. I mean, the three-way fight at the end of the Raid, the original Raid with Mad Dog.
That was on my list too.
It's absolutely incredible. Like, that's the thing about these movies. What makes them so rewatchable is that even though, like, Timo's output has kind of one-upped on the Raid movies, you still go back and watch the Raid movies, and you're like, this is some of the greatest fucking action I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely.
So, remake and television series feels like you can't do that with these filmmakers, because who we're talking about are very singular filmmakers who also have, frankly, like, Gareth has already made his own TV series. We've seen what that looks like when he went and made, you know, Gangs of London. So what we decided to do for our kind of makeshift audible question is, if we were to see Timo or Gareth take on any kind of IP or type of story, what do we think would fit them best, or what would we like to see the most?
I have quite a few.
Sure.
But for Timo, I would do actually Mortal Kombat. No, because they did that really shitty one that came out in COVID, and that Joe Taslim played Sub-Zero. It's a bad movie. It was dumb. It was not as violent because it was Warner Brothers kind of, you know, tail between their legs. If you let Timo go full and let him plot it too, just do a crazy and have it be the classic, like, Enter the Dragon on the island, like the tournament.
That
and just let
awesome.
Him go crazy, because he likes to do flowery character, you know, crazy characters.
Yeah.
He'd go nuts with
it's
his
totally
version.
In his wheelhouse.
I mean, here's my Scorpion. Here's my Sub Zero. Here's my Sonya Blade. And then he would go crazy with her being this, like, all the military stuff. Like, it would be awesome. And then for Gareth, I'd love to see him actually do the Iron Fist movie, if they ever did that. The show was terrible.
Yeah.
Iron Fist is one of my favorite comic book characters from Marvel, specifically like the 70s version and then also the Matt Fraction, Ed Brubaker comic in the 2000s. And that's like very street level, but that then ends up becoming much more comic booky with like Hydra and like going to like where he trained and got his power, the Iron Fist. But like, I just like to see his like street level thing, or do he and Luke Cage together, like Heroes for Hire.
Sure.
Just like beating the fuck out of guys in like brownstones. So those would be my two. Or I would do, or Teemo doing Conan the Barbarian. And I would just let him, just a full on
You'll
action.
Never get away from Conan.
I'm just saying it'd be great. A really, really gory Conan with him doing it.
Yours is a great jumping off point for the one I'd like to see Teemo do. Is, do you remember the old Sega Genesis game Splatterhouse?
Who are you talking to here, buddy?
Yeah, I figured you did.
I used to play the fucking arcade at JB's Pizza in Franklin, Indiana, man.
Where it's basically...
Big fan.
You're basically playing a serial killer, a Jason Voorhees type, who's like a muscle-bound Hulk who goes in and has to fight, like, mutants and shit.
We were actually a good guy. You're going to save your girlfriend, and the mask gives you power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look like Jason Voorhees.
True. True.
But, like, that would be so much fun to watch Teemo just completely unleash in that very splatterpunky kind of setting. So that might be my pick for him. For Gareth, I have a more complex answer, is that I'd love to see Gareth put his action and storytelling prowess to the test by adapting Don Winslow's Power of the Dog and doing like, have you ever read those novels?
I have not, no.
So it's his alternative history take on the Mexican cartels that's half... alternative history that basically tracks, it's almost kind of like an Oliver Stone story, to where it tracks, you know, the cartels back to like the days of Vietnam and poppy growing, and how like the CIA and American military industrial complex are kind of inextricable from the drug operation. Like, one couldn't exist without the other, and then builds all the way up to modern day, to where it, you know, becomes a real cops and robbers tale set inside of the cartels and everything, but has this very big, lavish, sprawling, elaborate history that is also steeped in like melodrama. Like, if Tony Scott were still alive,
oh yeah,
it would be the perfect material for Tony
Made
Scott.
Made on Fire style. And,
but like, it also has amazing action set pieces inside of it. And there's like a guy who's like a former black ops, like, military dude from like Vietnam who becomes like a drug enforcement like assassin. There's Sicarios, there's everything, and it's just, you could see Gareth Evans like really playing inside of this corrupt world while also being able to flex his action muscles all over again. There's a huge showdown set piece at the end of the first book, because it's a trilogy of books. It's, you have the Power of the Dog, the Cartel, and the Border, and you have a ton of material. And the cartel is actually kind of crazy, because the big drug kingpin from Mexico who escapes from prison at the beginning of that novel, the way he escapes is like almost no different from the way that El Chapo would later escape in real life. And they wrote the book before the real life event, so it's like crazy how it becomes like life imitates art. And it's just, they're very complex, interesting characters. You could find a role for Javier Bardem in there, no problem. Like, and did you also see that, not to get too far off track, but do you see that Javier Bardem's going to be Max Cady in the Cape Fear series that Nick and Costa is doing for Apple? Spielberg's producing it. Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's Nick and Costa running it, and Javier Bardem as Max Cady.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's going to be on Apple TV, so it's going to be expensive as fuck.
Fuck yeah.
Anyway, if you could do Power of the Dog for Apple TV, I'd watch the shit out too, because that's the big thing about adapting it, is that it would be very expensive.
Yes.
So you would need to do it with like a streamer.
Yeah,
and you have three books, and each book is like a very big and sprawling, takes place over decades. So like... you would need, you couldn't just do it as a movie. It would have to be a series. Mm. So, but that would be my pick for Evans.
Hell yeah.
Double feature.
So I had a few, I mean, obviously there's so many you could do with these. I had a couple, but the number one that kept popped my head was Flashpoint with Donnie Yen. Another film I feel like they kind of walked before they could run. It was like he started to do those films, I think it was in the aughts, of modern day cop martial art movies where it was like he was adding in a lot of, like, this is pre-John Wick, a lot of like submission stuff and a lot of different types of moves. Like, he's a very creative choreographer and star. So I would say Flashpoint, or to get, if we were going to go gory and crazy, I would do Project Wolf Hunting, which for, if people haven't seen, if you like Timo and you want more of that, like, uber gore action, but also kind of, it's like a Resident Evil movie almost on a boat. It's kind of everything I like. And I bought it immediately after I saw it. It's not as controlled and it's not as well made as Timo, but if you want to scratch that itch of just like another, just so much, so much arterial spray.
Yeah. Very bloody, just very really violent. It's gory. Return to the Living Dead on a boat.
Exactly. Like,
it's pretty awesome. My pick, it's pretty close to yours, is that I would do Benny Chan's Raging Fire.
Oh yeah.
With Donnie Yen.
I liked that.
I like that quite a bit too, yeah. And honestly, pair that with probably The Raid 2. Mm. They both kind of scratch a sprawling cop melodrama itch that has incredible action, deals with corruption, and just has real star performances at the center with like Donnie Yen in Raging Fire, and then Iko Uwe,
yeah,
in the middle of The Raid 2. So that would be my pick. It would be a long night at the movies. You're looking at almost like 5 hours, but well worth it.
What a way to go.
And Face Melter.
Done.
Here's a question. Instead of just one Face Melter, how many Face Melters did we just cover? Let's do that. Let's go down the list. Is The Raid a Face Melter?
Yes.
Is The Raid 2 a Face Melter?
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. The scenes that are so high... The action scenes are as...
By the time that movie ends, you're...
Yeah.
Again, you're levitating out of the theater.
It ends so strong.
The Night Comes for
the
Us.
The definition of a face melter.
Shadow Strays.
Yes, face melter.
Big Four.
Mm,
no.
No.
It's good.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of comedic downtime.
Yeah.
Where you're like, all right.
That's the thing that actually holds that movie back from being as good as Timo's other action films, is that the set pieces are great, but they're... almost too far spaced apart.
Like 30 minutes between some of them.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Like he's leaning too heavy into the comedy buddy aspect of the narrative. Killers, no. There's one that we haven't covered. I don't think it's a face melter because, again, it's a little too slow, but we actually never mentioned this up until this point. Apostle.
Oh, sorry, Apostle. Yeah, I said Acolyte. Apostle. Yeah. I like that movie.
I like that movie a lot. And we haven't really talked about it. It's Dan Stevens in a Gareth Evans movie.
Kind of a folk horror kind of thing.
A period folk horror movie that also has like some of Evans's action flourishes, like that whole fight.
With the pole?
In the mill, yeah, and in the pole and stuff. And like there's some supernatural shit to it. Is it a face melter? No, but that's another Netflix movie that's worth seeking out because it kind of came and went. And is now just part of the content machine. But Apostle, it looks incredible. It's got a portentious, almost Clive Barker sense of
doom. It kind of looks like The Lighthouse, too. Like, yeah, it
looks great.
Yeah.
Like, and it has Dan Stevens, like, doing a thing in it, which he's always doing a thing. But he's really doing a thing in that.
Yeah, it's a really, really gory, gross movie.
Cult movie.
Yeah, I remember because it's like... When they announced he was doing it, remember it premiered at Fantastic, and I didn't get to see it there, but I watched it. I think it, like a lot of this came out the next week on Netflix. But I really like. Actually, I might rewatch that this week then.
Yeah, movie's quite good.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So that one doesn't count. But I mean, so we have 1, 2, 4 face melters in one episode.
I mean, yeah,
It's a Sizzler buffet of face melters.
Stone cold face melters, too. Yeah,
stone cold, you can't argue with this bullshit. Like, yeah. Raid 2, you might be able to because of the slowness of the first half, but the action in that is so high that it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
So, damn, you get four face melters for the price of one. Bingo, bango, you got it. Martin, this has been great.
Yes.
You have a 5:30 call time, though, to get onto a flight, so we're going to end this. Right now, although we've done 80 minutes on The Night Comes for Us, which, you know, ain't nobody complaining about that. We don't know what we have next for you. We got to plan a few things. We have a big episode on Ozploitation coming up. We don't know if that's next. We have a couple other things that we've kicked around, a Bill Lustig episode potentially, a Stuart Gordon episode potentially. Peter Weir at some point. You have to stay tuned and see what order they come in at Secret Handshake.
See you next time.
Bye. Someone to